You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the show. Some of you are joining us for the very, very first time. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into. I want to remind everybody that we've got this drawing coming up on Monday evening. It's that close. I know some of you, when I say March 2nd, you think that's way down the road somewhere. It's Monday. Monday evening, we're going to have the drawing for the hand-woven tapestry from Urcos Island that you've seen Jerry Wills hold up in the ads that we have here on our video channel, our TV channel. And we're going to draw a name out of the hat. Now, the way you get your name in the hat is you have to be a member of our members area. You have to join our members area at our website. So you've got between now and Sunday night at midnight to join. But everyone who is a member will have their name in the hat. Actually, it's not going to be a hat. It's a box. And we're going to draw a name out, and whosoever name we draw out is going to win that tapestry. It's being sponsored by Expeditions TV. Jerry Wills is the executive producer there, and they are sponsoring the drawing. We appreciate them for doing that. Now, speaking of Jerry Wills, Jerry Wills' expedition team is going this weekend to explore that reported dimensional portal that is supposed to exist someplace in southern Arizona. They think that they have located where it exists, and they are going there to explore. Now, on Sunday afternoon, that's today is Friday, tomorrow is Saturday, the next day is Sunday. On Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m., they are going to broadcast live video from down there in southern Arizona where they're doing this exploring. And the way that you will be able to watch that is if you go to Channel U, that's channel-u.com, channel-u.com, and just go over there on your web browser, and you'll be able to watch the live video broadcast from down in southern Arizona where they are doing this exploring for this dimensional portal. I have no idea what we're going to see, but I'll be tuned in, and I hope you tune in as well. And I'm pretty sure, because I know Jerry, we'll see something that will be very interesting. So again, that's Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m. 5 p.m. Weird things happen all the time, and we're going to be talking about some weird things, a weird thing that happened out in Needles, California. I've been sitting on this, waiting. I know a lot of you have sent me email wanting to know when are we going to talk about this. Well, the time has come. We're finally going to be talking about the strange crash of something out at Needles, California, when we come back from this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Couple of things we need to talk about here before we move on to talk about Needles, California. And we are going to be talking about Needles, California here in just a moment. But a couple of things that I need to get everybody up to speed on. You know that I've been talking about here on the show this upcoming seminar. Well, it's on, and the date is March the 29th. Now, if you've asked yourself, well, you know, what is this about? It's, you know, I see it says God's in the garden. Okay, well, it has to do with origins. I'm not going to be teaching you the truth about where we came from in this seminar. What I am going to be doing is exposing you to the actual words that are in an ancient document that almost everybody has a copy of, Genesis. And people, when they hear that, they think, oh, I already know that story. You don't know that story. Believe me, you don't. If all you know is everything you've been taught about that story in Sunday school, you don't know that story. And because most people have never read the actual words that Genesis says. Now, some people say, oh, well, you know, it's just a matter of interpretation. You can make the Bible say whatever you want it to say. Well, the fact that you have that kind of thought, if you have that kind of thought, means that you've been exposed to people doing that. Those are called theologians. But you see, it's written with words. Words have definition. And it just says what it says. They've been hiding what it says. And in this seminar, I'm going to show you that what it actually says reads better than any Star Wars script. Now, whether you want to believe it or not, that's a whole different thing. This is not going to be a Sunday school lesson. This is not going to be a church service. I am not religious. But I am logical, rational, and I can read. And so we're going to take an in-depth look at what that document actually says about origins. And believe you me, it is fascinating. It will blow you away. Well, it's March 29th. It is a live seminar. It is a live seminar. That means that you can either attend in person physically by being here, or you can attend by registering, and we'll send you the password, and then you can watch it live on our KSS TV channel, the channel you're watching right now if you're watching the show. Most people around the world are listening to the show because it is, after all, a radio show. But it's the same. You simply come to my website, and you'll be asked for a password, and when you click, you put the password in and click, the video will start, and you'll be able to see and experience the seminar live. Now, the reason I bring that up is because it is coming up, but also because of this. In this week's K-Files e-zine, I was going to send it out today, and then I thought, no, let me get one announcement in about this so people will be ready for it. And so I'm going to send the K-Files e-zine out following the show tonight. So you have time, if you have not yet subscribed, you have time to subscribe right now. Go to kevinsmithshow.com and click where it says K-Files e-zine and subscribe. It's free. Why wouldn't you subscribe? Why would you want to be in the dark about, you know, if you like this show, why would you want to be in the dark? you need to subscribe. K-Files eZine. In K-Files eZine, there is a lot of information about this upcoming seminar, and there is this, a special discount for early registration. All right? And you want to save some money, you need to go ahead and subscribe to K-Files eZine, and then you'll be able to register for the seminar and save some money. All right. Walter Bosley is a name that you're familiar with. Jeff Woolwine, a name that you're familiar with. If you have been taking in this show for any length of time, because Walter and Jeff have, over the past few months, been on the show several times, and for a reason. The reason is because they are doing research into phenomena that one phenomena goes hand in hand with the other phenomenon, and the two of them go hand in hand with strange things flying in the skies. Walter Bosley has been here talking about ley lines and has explained what they are, and then his theory about what he thinks their function is. And then Jeff Woolwine has been here talking about these ancient petroglyphs. If you have been tracking the show here now for the past couple of weeks, well, even this week, you have seen Jeff Woolwine's video, his latest DVD. We played it. You've seen it. All right. Now, having said that, out in Needles, California, May the 14th, 2008, out in Needles, California, there was a strange event that took place around 3 o'clock, 3:30 or so in the morning, about 3 o'clock, I think, in the morning. There were people up at that time who saw a very strange object fly streaking across the sky at a very high rate of speed. It was sort of a turquoise color. It was giving off sort of a turquoise glow. One of the witnesses said at one point it slowed and then took off again. And then there are witnesses that saw it dive toward the ground and crash. One witness said it bounced once. It hit the ground and bounced with sort of a thump and then went back down. Well, this has been a very, very mysterious crash for a lot of reasons. The event by itself is mysterious. Wouldn't you agree? All by itself, that's a pretty mysterious event. But it's not the first time that this turquoise object has been seen in the area. As a matter of fact, April the 17th, 2002, at around 3:30 in the morning, a motorist that was traveling just west of Needles on Interstate 40 saw the oval-shaped turquoise glowing object. It hovered above the road in midair. Back in 1997 near Columbus, Ohio, there was another sighting. A photographer was filming clouds and in color, and this object appeared on several frames of the film that were photographed. So this is not something that's brand new, but what is brand new about this is it crashed. Within minutes, within 15 to 20 minutes, witnesses saw a fleet of five military helicopters flying in formation that flew to the area, flew toward where this thing crashed. And then one of the witnesses said that he observed a heavy lift crane helicopter. Now, the picture that I've put up is a picture of a Sikorsky CH-54. I don't know that that is exactly the type of helicopter that was used, but when he says that it was a heavy lift crane type helicopter, it would be either this helicopter, not maybe this exact machine, but this style helicopter, or it could have been some other type of crane-type helicopter, but this is the most common that's used. That's a Sikorsky CH-54. Now, Needles is a pretty interesting place. Needles, California, is in the southeast corner of California. I have put a map on the screen. For those of you who are watching, you can see where Needles is located. It's located right next to the Colorado River, right on the border of Nevada to the north and Arizona to the east. It is in San Bernardino County, and these are pretty interesting people. Pretty interesting people in Needles, because the folks in Needles don't like to be messed around with. And at one point, a few years ago, they were in a dispute with San Bernardino County because they said the county was not keeping up, fully staffing and fully equipping a full-time hospital in Needles that they were supposed to be doing. And the people in Needles began talking rather seriously about seceding from California. One of their options was that they would vote to join Nevada. One of their options was they would vote to join Arizona. And another option was, they said, well, we'll just secede from California and form, or from San Bernardino County, and just form our own county. So they were, these are pretty independent-minded folks at Needles, California. Needles was founded in 1883. Now, prior to that, Needles, California was inhabited by the Mojave Indians. And the Mojave people still inhabit that area in large numbers. They're not the majority in the area, but they are in large numbers, and they do have a reservation there. In fact, Needles is sitting right in the reservation. And all around Needles, and by the way, Needles is named Needles because to the east of where this town is located, looking just to the east, you can see these very sharp-pointed needle-type spires sticking up from the desert. That's in Arizona. But they named the town Needles because of what they could see from there, because they could see the needle spikes sticking up from the desert. The Mojave people inhabit that area and did inhabit that area for thousands of years prior to any white settlers coming. And then before them, there was someone. Nobody really knows who. But guess what they did? They chipped petroglyphs into the rocks all around there, and the petroglyphs all around there show the same kinds of things that Jeff Woolline showed you in his video right here on this show. So, one of our listeners wrote in and said, you know, it'd be interesting to see if Jeff thinks that there is a correlation between petroglyphs and UFOs, not just around South Mountain. We know that he thinks that there is a correlation at South Mountain, but around the United States, in other parts of the world even, is there a correlation between UFO activity and petroglyphs? Well, apparently there is. Apparently there is some correlation, because these petroglyphs around, at least around the United States, many of these petroglyphs depict the same sort of scenes as are depicted out on South Mountain. And these petroglyphs very often have the same symbol that indicates an energy line or ley lines. And they depict portals with strange-looking beings coming out of the portals or going into the portals. That's true around Needles, California. So on May the 14th, 2008, an oval object with a turquoise glow streaked across the sky at 3 o'clock in the morning. The owner of a radio station, KTOX, was on his way to work. 3 o'clock in the morning. You may not know this, but broadcast days usually start by 4 o'clock in the morning. And so he was on his way to work. He saw it. A retired security chief that used to be in charge of security at LAX, which, of course, is a major airport, he had gotten up and had taken his cat outside, and he saw it. And by the way, he does some investigations from time to time for KTOX, having to do with UFO sightings and so forth. He saw it. There was a man on a houseboat on the river at a place called Top Rock. And if I put the map back up, Top Rock, if you see where Needles is, follow Highway Route 66 south. And after you follow it south, it turns and goes to Route Highway 62 back to the east. And it goes over into Arizona. As it crosses over into Arizona, you're at Top Rock. And he was on a houseboat. He saw it. They said it was coming out of the northeast, headed to the southwest. One witness said it hit the ground, and then it bounced, and then it went down again. Within 15 to 20 minutes, about five military helicopters showed up. One of those was a heavy lift crane-type helicopter. And the witness said that this helicopter hovered and in a moment lifted the oval turquoise object out and flew away. Within a few minutes, military trucks were passing through the town of Needles. A truck and then some vans, actually. The people inside were not dressed in military uniform, but they were passing through the town headed toward the area of the crash. And that's not all they did. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about Needles, California. It's a small town. I think the population is somewhere between 4,000 to 6,000 people. And you can see a picture of Needles, California on your screen right at this moment if you happen to be watching on our TV stream. All right, now, Needles, California, as you can see, is right on the Colorado River. And just west of Needles and a little bit south is where this crash happened. Now, actually on the west side. More, it's more south than it is west. It's on the west side of the river, but more south than it is west where this crash happened. No one has actually, as far as I know, been to the actual crash site. I don't know that there's anyone who knows exactly, precisely where it crashed. But they did see the operation of where the helicopters came in, and one was a crane-type helicopter, and lifted this thing, whatever it was, from the ground and took it away. Now, then the manager at the, or actually the owner of KTOX, which is an AM radio station out in Needles, California, one I might add that we would love to have our show on, but he observed this convoy of a military truck, and then it had something covered up in the back, and then three vans, I think it was three, following the military truck, and they were black. And he says that he noticed that one of them parked outside as if doing surveillance. They looked at him, he looked at them, he noticed that they were not wearing any military uniforms, they were in civilian clothes, but then they drove on. However, later he noticed one of them was parked outside as if doing surveillance on the radio station. Well, then there was, I said they were black, they were dark green, which would be the color that you would expect for military vehicles. But then there was a lady by the name of Toni Sagan, a member of the River Valley Democratic Club in that area. And she was questioned by a stranger at the club, meeting, someone she had never seen before, after she appeared on the radio station to talk about the 2008 presidential election. At that time, it was still, the campaign was still on. And so she talked about the 2008 presidential race. And this man wanted to know if she heard any off-air conversations while she was at the radio station between the owner of the radio station and a witness to the crash that he had on the telephone. Toni Sagan said that she had never seen this man before, and he seemed to be out of place in terms of the way he was dressed as compared to most people that live in the area. So strange things have been happening. The crash, the thing in the sky was strange, the crash was strange, the helicopters were strange, the military vehicles were strange, the surveillance was strange, this person questioning her, wanting to know if she had heard the owner of the radio station say anything off air, you know, something that didn't go out over the air. Did he say anything when he was talking with this witness on the telephone? If so, what did he say? Strange stuff. Strange stuff. Now, some people will say, okay, this was a UFO. And actually, in the raw definition of the word, it is a UFO. It was flying, and it's unidentified as far as you and I are concerned. We don't know what it is, so that's an unidentified flying object. But some people will say this would be an extraterrestrial UFO, and that the military was tracking it as it was coming in. That's why they were Johnny on the spot once it crashed, and they then recovered an extraterrestrial craft. Well, that's one possibility. Another possibility is that this is a previously recovered extraterrestrial craft that perhaps was being test flown by a human pilot, perhaps out of Area 51. He lost control of it and crashed. That is another theory that I've read on the internet. I've read both of those theories on the internet. There is another possibility. And the other possibility is that this is completely terrestrial technology that has a super high-tech, super top-secret, above-top-secret sort of technology that was being tested, and it's terrestrial. And in other words, we designed it, we built it, and it got out of control, crashed, and had to be recovered. I've read that on the internet, and I have read that it was terrestrial in origin, but based on back-engineered extraterrestrial technology. And it crashed and had to be recovered. So all of those theories I have read. And the fact is, we don't know. The fact is, nobody knows. It's all speculation. But what is not speculation is that it happened. Now, it's possible this evening, just possible, that we may have someone who is listening from the Needles area, that area around Needles. Now, this thing came from the northeast, headed toward the southwest. It is possible, then, if you get out a map of the United States and look at it, you will see that to the northeast of Needles is Laughlin, Nevada. So it is possible, just possible, there may have been some witnesses up around Laughlin, Nevada as it traveled from the northeast down to the southwest. There may be some witnesses in the Needles area that maybe you have spoken out or maybe you have not yet spoken out, but we would love to hear from you. And we're going to open the telephone lines in just a bit. And I know from the email that I've been getting about this incident that a lot of you have been very interested in this Needles crash. I know that, and I know you've been following it, and you may have formed some opinions about all of this in terms of, what was this thing? Was it terrestrial? Was it extraterrestrial? Was it terrestrial, but based on back-engineered technology? Maybe you have formed some opinions about this, and you could share with us why you have the opinion you do, and that may help some other folks to formulate their opinions. So what we're going to do is we're going to... open up the telephone line. And I'm particularly interested in hearing from people who maybe saw this thing, or maybe you have investigated into it pretty quickly after it happened. And you have some insight into this that we have not obtained. Now, the telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889, and we'll go ahead and open the phone lines and take your calls. Now, George Knapp, who has been a guest on this show, and I think just about everyone in the world of UFOs is familiar with George Knapp. He is the news anchor, a news anchor out in Las Vegas, Nevada. Las Vegas is located northwest of Needles. And George Knapp has done some reporting on this as well. He's looked into it. And he finds all of the circumstances rather strange himself. I think that we ought to take a serious look at this because, look, let's say that whatever this is extraterrestrial. Just for the sake of argument, let's say that it is. Then what we're looking at here is something as important as Roswell. We're looking at something, an event here that is as important as the Roswell incident. And the reason I say that is because you have the presence of the military almost immediately. You have plainclothes military almost immediately. You have surveillance of civilians almost immediately. By the way, I failed to tell you, the guy that was on the houseboat down at Top Rock said that he was out on the deck, and when the helicopters flew over, headed toward the crash site, one of them sort of circled around and took a look at him and then joined the others again and flew on. So we had that event as well. All right, that, which would, at 3 o'clock in the morning, would indicate that they must have been using infrared equipment to scan the ground and could see there was someone sitting out on the boat deck. All right, then you have the surveillance of the radio station. And then you've got, in addition to that, you've got the lady, Toni Sagan, who said that, you know, and she's not related to the UFO thing. I don't know if she's the head of it, but she's certainly a member of this political group. What was it called? The River Valley Political, no, River Valley Democratic Club. She's a member of the River Valley Democratic Club. And she went down to the radio station to talk about politics, to talk about the upcoming, at that time, upcoming 2008 election, and to talk about the political race that was going on at that time. And then when the River Valley Democratic Club had a meeting, there was a stranger there, not dressed in the style that the locals normally dress in, and just seemed a little bit out of place, somebody she had never seen before. And he was asking questions about, when you were down at the radio station, did you hear the owner of the radio station make any off-air comments about information about this, when he was talking with one of the UFO witnesses, one of the crash witnesses? Did he talk about that off-air? And if so, what did he say? So when you pile all that together, what you've got is certainly the military is interested in this event. A very high level of interest, I would say. Based on what we're looking at, a very high level of interest. And yet, George Knapp also reports that when he contacted the FAA and the military and the police and the fire department, all of them said they knew nothing about it. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about this crash of something incredible out at Needles, California. Happened back in May the 14th, 2008. The telephone line is open. If you would like to express an opinion about this, we would love to hear from you what your opinion is. We understand that it is opinion. If you were a witness to this, we'd love to hear from you as well. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Now, if you are outside of the United States and you are outside of Canada, in other words, you do not live in the United States, you do not live in Canada, you're somewhere else, you can send me a flash message by going over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down, you will see a link that says Flash Message. And you can click that and send your message. I'll read it, and I'll be glad to comment on it. I've got one here from South Africa that says, Mr. Smith, why are you dressed so casually tonight? Because it's getting hotter out here. It's Arizona. It's not hot yet, but it's getting warmer. And as it gets warmer, I dress more casually. The days of the neckties are numbered, my friends. As we get into summer, you won't see any neckties. And it's been a little bit warm out here today. So that is the reason. I've got one from Germany here, and this one is from Nigel, which I thought was a British name. So maybe this is a Brit that is living in Germany. And he says, I'm just wondering why you're having open line again tonight for the second time this week. Why no guest? Okay, pretty simple. One, this is a story that I've been saving up information. I've been storing up information on to see where this story would go. And we needed to do something with it. We needed to discuss it, to expose it, and to see what's what here. Another reason is because I've had three guests this week that all three broke our rules on this show about use of profanity, and I've had enough. I'm not a prude about that, but we have radio affiliates, and those radio affiliates fall under the guidelines of the FCC. I've had three guests, all three told prior to the show that we don't do that, and all three did it, and I'm fed up right to here with it. I've worked too long, too hard to build this show to have guests who simply don't have the presence of mind to hold their tongue and to use civilized language when they're broadcasting. Now let me froth forth a little bit more. They would not have done that on Coast to Coast. They would not have done it on Larry King Live, and when they did it on my show, they dumped on me and told me by doing it that I'm just a little pipsqueak insignificant broadcaster, and they can do what they want to do. That's the way it goes. No guess until I'm happy again. All right, when I'm happy again, maybe we will. But all of that's in there. I've worked way too long and way too hard to build your confidence in this show, to have it blown away by someone who thinks you and me don't matter. And people who think I don't matter, don't matter. All right, the telephone line is open, 623-444-5889. It would appear to me that you are totally not interested in the Needles, California crash and the military's high interest in it, and the fact that they and the police and the fire department, everybody says, the FAA, we don't know anything about this. And yet, there is documented evidence of high interest by the military in this incident. And yet, no one knows anything about it. None of the official sources are talking. I think that screams volumes. I think that screams that this is probably one of the most important crashes of something that has taken place in a long, long time. I think it puts it in the ranks of Roswell, New Mexico, and the crash that occurred at Roswell. You know, at Roswell, you had a flurry of military activity. You had people being put under surveillance. You have witnesses that say they were threatened. In this one, out at Needles, California, we have not heard of somebody being threatened. We haven't heard that. But we have heard of a high level of interest by the military, both air and ground. Now, we would presume, and we're just guessing here, but I would presume that after the whatever it was picked up by the helicopter, the crane helicopter, I would presume that it was set on the back of this truck that was seen going through Needles. And then it was covered up with a tarp. I don't know that that's the case, but, I mean, when you put it all together, that sounds kind of like maybe what happened. And the convoy then, with that truck, went past the radio station. The owner gets a look at them, a good look at them. They're in civilian clothes in military vehicles. They look at him. One of them sort of locked eyes with him. And then after that, sometime after that, he noticed that there was one of those military vehicles parked outside the radio station, apparently keeping him under surveillance. And so you've got this high level of interest by the military. This thing, whatever it was picked up. It was removed. And it was carted away to somewhere, presumably on the back of that truck. Anthony from the Netherlands has sent me a flash message, and it says, if I'm correct, I heard you saying that when the helicopter arrived, it lasted a few minutes to lift the craft. It took a few minutes to lift the craft. And as far as I understand, UFOs are not built with handles to lift them up in case of troubles. You would need a lot more time to attach the ropes or whatever they use underneath whatever was left of the craft to get it safely in the air. So if it was possible to arrange that within a few minutes, then the craft had to be terrestrial. Well, I understand what you're saying, and you make a very good point, Anthony, an excellent point. However, crash recovery teams can do things really fast. Lots of rescue and recovery teams can do things really fast that you would not expect that they would be able to do. They are trained to do so. When someone is trapped in a car after an automobile accident and they're pinned in, they're trapped, they can't get out because the car has been sort of crushed around them, the rescue team goes in with something called the Jaws of Life. You've probably seen it. It's a big piece of handheld equipment, and it cuts through steel. Now, without that, you would expect it to take hours to cut somebody out of, to cut the car from around an injured person. But with that, it can be done in a matter of minutes. And so you can get them out of there pretty quickly. Normally, it can be done within a matter of minutes. Putting a sling around this craft, whatever it was that went down, putting a sling around it would not take much time if the people that were doing it were trained to do that. And obviously they would send out people who are trained to recover these types of things, whatever it was. So it happened pretty quick. And then they drove out of town with it. Was it terrestrial or extraterrestrial? 623-444-5889. And if we don't get any calls on this on the other side of the break, pretty quickly, I'll assume you're not interested in it. We'll move on to open line. And we are back. It's the Kevin Smith Show, and we are going open line. Open line because, quite obviously, you're not interested in needles, California. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Last night, I mentioned that scientists out at MIT have developed, or they are developing, a new type of rocket that runs on, it's a plasma thruster. And that really is a huge step forward, even though what they're developing is really a small rocket engine. It's not a launch engine. It's an engine that they can put on satellites and maneuver the satellites with these plasma thrusters. And the reason that they are doing that is because it is so massively expensive to load these satellites with rocket fuel and use, you know, conventional rocket fuel as a means of moving satellites around. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Lynn from Southern California.
Hi, Lynn.
I have a question.
All right.
You were saying about Walter Bosley being in connection with this as far as ley lines, but I don't know if I heard you say, is this on a ley line, this crash in Needles? Was this on a ley line?
There are ley lines running throughout the Mojave Valley, and this crashed in the Mojave Valley.
And I had another thought. If they were wearing civilian clothing, that would lead me to think it would be more likely that it was terrestrial, because wouldn't they wear hazmat outfits or something to protect them in case there was radiation if it was definitely from somewhere they didn't know?
Well, you would think so. I would assume they would. However, maybe they put those on when they get up near the site. Maybe they don't travel in them. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, there are ley lines all over California, especially Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are some ley lines that run through Disney World or Disneyland.
Yeah, I read that book, Latitude 33,
Yeah. And, but I find it really peculiar that this took place. Maybe it's just purely coincidental. I mean, I have to be honest, it could be purely coincidental that this thing went down in an area that's just littered with these petroglyphs that are very similar to the ones that we've shown here on this show from South Mountain. So if it's terrestrial, what do you think it is? It's an oval, and it's giving off a turquoise glow. And I failed to mention this. One of the witnesses said that it was bright enough that it illuminated the ground.
Hmm.
So what do you think it would be?
Back engineered.
What's your level of confidence that we truly are back engineering extraterrestrial craft?
I believe 100%.
Okay, now let me ask you, why are you so confident?
Well, just because of books and things I've read about people who've gotten in there and actually drew pictures of the crafts that they were back engineering.
So do you buy Bob Lazar's story?
Yeah.
You know, George Knapp.
I think it's true.
George Knapp has stood by Bob Lazar, and I saw him on television. Actually, I was watching a rerun of, I think it was UFO Hunters, but I can't swear to that. But I saw him on television last night, actually very early this morning, probably 2 or 3 o'clock this morning. And they asked George Knapp point blank, do you think Bob Lazar was being truthful? And Knapp said, yes, I do.
Yeah. I think he was sincere.
Yeah, but beyond sincere, I think he was telling the truth because, you know, when Los Alamos National Laboratory said, we don't know anything about that guy, he never worked here, George Knapp came up with an internal telephone book from Los Alamos, and there was Bob Lazar with an extension number.
Yeah, there's proof.
I would say so, yeah. All right, Lynn, thanks for the call.
Okey-doke.
You rescued me. Nobody's calling tonight. I think everybody, their Nibiru has passed too close to the earth already, and everyone's fingers are broken.
Either that or everyone's out looking at that comet.
Yeah, it could be that, too. Yeah. Did you get a look at it?
No.
Yeah, we can't see it from where I am because we're surrounded right where I am. We've got too many buildings and too many trees that people have, you know, there's no trees that like this that grow naturally in the desert, but people move here and plant trees.
Yeah.
And so all around me here is, the sky is obstructed, but,
yeah.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right. 623-444-5889. I have a flash message here from Paul in London, and he says that he wants to know, what is my assessment? Do I think this was extraterrestrial, or do I think it was terrestrial? You know, I sort of lean with Anthony from the Netherlands. Not because they did this very quickly, but because of just everything involved with this. You know, the helicopters were on this within 15 minutes, 20 minutes. And they brought a helicopter in the fleet that had a crane that could hoist this thing off the ground and set it up on a truck. I'm presuming they put it on the truck. The fact that the helicopters are there so quick and they bring with them this helicopter that has the ability to lift this thing indicates to me that we're probably talking about terrestrial technology here. And I cannot prove that, but I mean, when I put the pieces together, that's the direction I lean, is that this was terrestrial technology. Maybe it was not, but I sort of lean that direction. Which points out, let's assume, a moment ago I said, let's assume just for the sake of argument that it's extraterrestrial. Now let's assume that it's terrestrial. Now, if it's terrestrial, I'm even more excited because it points to and provides some confirmation for something we've heard Walter Bosley say on this show when he says, you know, don't sell human ingenuity and abilities and skills short. We may be primitive when compared to some extraterrestrial race that's out there. That may be true. But, on the other hand, within the context of our Earth and within the context of human life, we've got some really smart people that are building some technology that is way, way into the future. So this, let's say it is terrestrial. Then whatever we're talking about is that type of technology. Whatever we're talking about is technology that really points to very advanced human ability. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Well, not now. Had you on hold, sorry. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show when I say you're live. Okay, but you'll hear, when I put you on hold, you'll hear me talking. So just hang in there, all right? 623-444-5889. When you listen to these reports about the very strange thing going through the sky. It's oval shaped. It's giving off a turquoise glow. It's lighting up the ground. And it's moving at an incredible speed. Then it slows down, then it speeds up, and then it crashes. It bounces and then falls to the ground again. You know, if that is terrestrial technology, that is phenomenal terrestrial technology. And, you know, when we look at, for instance, I mentioned the scientist at MIT. Well, you know, MIT just has that reputation. They build some really advanced stuff. They design some advanced stuff. And at MIT, they are developing this new plasma thruster rocket engine. And this plasma thruster rocket engine will go on satellites at first. But imagine being able to put this on a spacecraft that carries humans. Imagine when they develop it to that point, what it will mean. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Phil from Kentucky.
Hi, Phil.
How you doing?
Good.
I just wondering, was that crash any close to any homes or anything?
No. It was out just outside of town in a very hilly area.
So there wasn't really a lot of people around, or?
Well, it was. First of all, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and this is Needles, California, is a town of 4,000 to 5,000 people. So it's you're not going to have a lot of people at any time.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And then, so the only people you're going to have up at 3 o'clock in the morning are going to be people that are working the night shift somewhere, and most of those will be inside working.
Yeah.
And then people who, I mean, you know, not too many shifts change at 3 in the morning, but there are a few occupations where 3 o'clock in the morning is a normal time to be up and out and going to work. And one of them is a radio station, because the broadcast day usually starts at 4 o'clock in the morning. By 4:30 in the morning, they're doing the news. So from 4 to 4:30, usually what they're doing is what's called rip and read. They're getting all the news off the wire, deciding what it is they're going to report on, and getting ready to do their first newscast at 4:30. So, and then you had a guy on a houseboat. I don't know what he was doing, but he was up at 3 o'clock in the morning. He was out on the Colorado River, southeast of Needles, and he saw it.
I was out late hours, so.
Yeah, you're a fisherman.
Yeah, I like that.
I used to be. I don't have time for it. You know, where I am right now, you have to drive for a while to get to water that's enough water to fish in. So I don't fish much anymore. But you're right. Back when I was a fisherman, there were a lot of times when I was out 3, 4 o'clock in the morning fishing.
Yeah, we'd watch the skies a lot, and I've seen a lot of stuff.
You ever seen a UFO?
Oh, yeah. Seen quite a few things.
What's the closest UFO that you ever saw?
Well, I've seen a fireball. It's probably about 50 feet off the ground. But it was flying intelligently, because if it hadn't, it would have crashed into a hill. It was daylight, almost dusk around that time.
So what happened when it got to the hill?
Well, it went behind this one hill, and as I went down, it disappeared. I don't know where it went.
Uh-huh. But it didn't hit the hill.
No.
Yeah.
It would have had to, but it had to steer around it. So.
And what did you think about that?
Well, it was sort of freaky. It was traveling real slow, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the farmer, you know, you could see it just sort of whipping in the wind behind it.
Uh-huh. Wow. Did it scare you?
I've seen a lot of other things, too. But that's one of the closest ones I was to.
Mm-hmm. Did it scare you?
Oh, no.
No?
It sort of startled me, but, you know. It was about the size of a Volkswagen or something like that.
Uh-huh. Wow. But
I don't know if it could have been anything inside it, you know, it being on fire, but it could have been a probe or something. I don't know.
And that was, where were you when you saw that?
I was close to a lake up in Carter County, Kentucky.
Okay. Are there any military bases around near that lake?
No, there's none around there.
What about Indian tribes in the past? Was that inhabited pretty heavily by Native Americans?
Oh, yeah. And we find early, it's on time, the Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
Is in that area.
And what about petroglyphs? Are there petroglyphs in that area carved into the rocks?
I used to roam in the woods, but I never did find any, no.
Yeah. All right. Well, Phil, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Thank you. 623-444-5889. If you're outside of the United States, if you're outside of Canada, you can go to my website and scroll down. You'll see a link in it's green, and it says flash message. And click that and send me a flash message. I'll read it on the air and comment on it. And you know, if you decide, I don't care where you are in the world, if you decide you want to make the telephone call, that telephone number will work, but it's not toll free. All right, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889, if you have a question or a comment. I mentioned that, you know, this whole thing with the plasma rocket thrusters, this could revolutionize our ability to do manned space exploration. One of the things that really has to be considered when we send someone over to Mars, we have to consider the weight of the consumables that go on board that ship. That's the fuel. You have to consider that weight. You have to consider the weight of the water supply, and that's going to be a pretty important thing. The water supply, the food, etc. And so if you can lighten that spaceship by not having to carry so much weight in fuel, if you can lighten it just a little bit, what happens is you give it the possibility of carrying more water, more food, and more other supplies they need for survival once they get to Mars. Now, we may someday have a colony living on Mars. Some people think we have a base there now. I hear that. I've heard that a lot. I've heard a lot of people say that. John Lear was on this show, and he says it's there for sure. Ted Tweetmeyer has been on this show, and he says it's there for sure. Well, I haven't seen it. I'm not saying that I don't believe them. I'm just saying I haven't seen it. They have seen or heard something that convinces them that that's the case. I have not seen that base. But I tell you what I have seen. I have seen concept drawings, some of them at NASA's website, for a human base or colony on the moon. And on Mars, I've seen concept drawings of that and art, you know, artist conceptions of it. Someday, it will be for sure a reality. If it's not already, it will be. And people will be able to generate electricity, and they'll be able to convert oxygen out of the soil or whatever. But to mine water that may be locked in frozen deposits, they'll be able to mine that and use it and crack the hydrogen out of it for fuel and the oxygen for breathing and so forth. And they may be able even to grow plants there. But that's not a reality right now. And so the first humans that get there, imagine just going into the wilderness. Imagine this. Go into the wilderness, the desert, anywhere on the earth, with, we'll say, 6 bottles of water and 6 sandwiches, and you're expected to stay for a month. And you're going to have to find a way to survive after you run out of water and sandwiches. Well, that is on a micro scale what the astronauts would find, what they would face, if we send them to Mars right now. If we had the spaceship that could get them there, and we sent them right now, that's kind of what they would be faced with. And the reason is because there's so much weight consumed, or so much that has to be accounted for, just for the fuel. So by building these thrusters, these plasma thruster engines, once they get these developed to the point that they can be used on a spacecraft that can carry humans and can be flown across from here to Mars, they will have significantly reduced the weight requirements for fuel. Significantly. Meaning then that they could put more water on board and more food on board and other types of survival gear on board. So this is a very important project. It's taking place at MIT. Who's to say that what crashed in Needles, California was not something being tested like that? Who knows? I don't know, but it's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. We have a flash message from another Nigel, this one in the United Kingdom. And it says, I once heard that the Great Pyramids had some kind of amplifier sound like Jerry Wills and the portals, and the portal. Is that true? You know, I've heard that. I don't know. I forget who it was, but we had someone that was on the show who said that someone exploring inside of the Great Pyramid had discovered that if you make certain sounds with a, I think it was a flute, that a door opens. But I don't know. I mean, I've heard that. I think the Great Pyramid is really a mystery that has proven to be a mystery beyond our comprehension. We don't have the technology today to build that pyramid. Now, I've heard people say, oh, yeah, we do. No, we don't. We don't know how to build it. Now, can we build a building the size of that pyramid that's shaped like that pyramid? Yes, we can. Can we go cut the stones and move them and stack them so that it will stand and do it with such precision as that pyramid is built? No, we don't have the technology to do it. And if we were to try it, what we would find is the pyramid before we got it built would begin to sag, because we don't know really till this day how they were able to build that. And, we don't know who built it, and we don't know, how they were able to build it with such precision and keep it from collapsing under its own weight. There are some clues from inside of the pyramid, but you understand There are only a few passageways and chambers that have been discovered and explored. There may be many more. But we can only see what's on the inside of those passages and on the inside of those rooms that have been discovered and have been explored. And that is a minuscule amount of the pyramid. So we don't really know how that thing is built so that it can stand under its own weight. There are theories about it, but nobody really knows. I think it would be, the Great Pyramid's a pretty interesting thing also. When, if you go back to the time when standard Egyptology says it was built, the tools that they had available to them were copper. And if you just take some copper tools that are made in the same fashion as they had back then and go out to the rock quarry where these blocks were cut from, take your copper tools and start trying to cut one block, just one. See how well you do. Because the copper is not hard enough to cut the granite. So there you go. How did they do it? We don't know. Who did it? We don't really know. What type of construction principles were used to make sure that it stood and didn't sag under its own weight? We don't really know. We've got some clues, as I say, from inside those tunnels and inside of some of those chambers. But here are some things we do know. We do know that the Great Pyramid was never built for a tomb and was never used for a tomb. We know that absolutely for sure. It has no hieroglyphics in it. Plus, the very first person ever to get into the interior, the inside of that pyramid after it was built and sealed, was an Arab warrior. And he finally got into the king, what they call the king's chamber, and lifted the lid off of the sarcophagus, what they say is a sarcophagus. And do you know what he found? Nothing. It was empty. The very first person ever to be inside the Great Pyramid after it was sealed up found that it was empty. So it was never used as a tomb. What was it used for? Some people say that it was being used to that it was a power generating plant. And that actually it was used to collect energies and to project them as a weapon. Don't know about that either, but that's one of the theories that's out there. And there have been some energy anomalies that have been detected around that Great Pyramid. So, and inside the Great Pyramid. So I don't know. There are a lot of mysteries there. I recommend, though, if you are interested in the Great Pyramid, I recommend that you get a DVD from Ken Klein Productions. It is called The Pillar of Enoch. It is one of the best, with some of the best information that I've ever seen on the pyramid. And again, it's called The Pillar of Enoch. And it's by Ken Klein Productions. All right, caller, you're gone. All right, let's go back to the phone line. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin. It's Don here, calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Don.
How you doing tonight?
I'm dying, Don. How are you doing?
Well, yeah, everything's slow. My website's been slow. I noticed, things have just... It must be just time of year, the month or something.
Well, I think there are a combination of things. One thing is that people have their minds so consumed and worried over the economy.
Oh, yeah, with today's news?
Well, the thing is, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, really. That's what I figured, too. Hey, you know, I just wanted to call in and say hello. I don't really have any comments. I just want to let you know, I have the show on every night, and I'm listening to you. But I've just been so darn busy, I'm starting an online maw, a super maw.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a paranormal, UFO, all kinds, everything under the sun in this maw. So I've been hard at work at that.
Wow. That's good.
And like I say, I listen to you with one ear and then the other, rest of my focus has been on working. And
when are you going to open this maw, Don?
Pardon me?
When are you going to open it?
You know, I don't know, Kevin. I think it's going to be at least 2 months. This is a big project, a big expense, and I'm putting a lot into this. So if it sinks, I'm sunk. But there is nothing like this online. You know, the only thing that comes close to this is the UFO store, and they pale in comparison to what I want to do.
So you're going to be carrying only products that are related to the paranormal or to UFOs, right?
Right. Anything to do with paranormal, UFOs, aliens, you know, genre, art, apparel, books, CDs, DVDs.
How about old wedding pictures of me?
What's that?
How about old wedding pictures of me? That's paranormal.
Well, yeah, old wedding pictures would be paranormal, too. That would be pretty scary.
Oh, the ghosts from the past.
Feedback corrected.
I'm sorry?
I see you still have not got the feedback corrected. I'm getting a lot of feedback.
Well, you're the only one. Nobody else has mentioned it.
I think people just don't speak up, but I know every time I talk to you lately, I've had it.
Yeah?
And you're just a far off in the distance. I can barely hear you.
There is absolutely no way for me to correct that, Don.
Oh, well. Such is life.
Yep.
Yeah, hey, I just want to let you know, man, I'm still here and I'm still tuning in. I haven't forgotten about you. You know, like I say, you know, you can't shut the Kevin Smith show off while going through withdrawal symptoms, you know. And
well, that's true.
So.
All right. Well, Don, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right.
Take care, Kevin.
Hey, by the way, in your mall, the DVD that I just mentioned would be an excellent one to carry. The Pillar of Enoch by Ken Klein Productions. Fantastic,
yeah, you know,
DVD.
My mall is going to be set up where it's actually providers can have their own midsection. So each provider can come in through the back door and have their own midsection and stock their own inventory and control their own inventory.
Very good.
So, yeah, I'm going to be contacting everybody. I would love to be able to get a good source for night vision goggles and you name everything under the sun, ghost hunting, electronic equipment, and you name it. I hope to be able to carry it.
Well, you be sure and let us know when you go online with it.
Yeah, and I want to carry that famous book, too, by the – oh, God, it. Great. What's that author's name? Kevin Smith, God's in the Garden.
Well, you certainly can carry it. That'll be great.
Okay,
all right.
Kevin.
Thanks for the call. Yeah. All right, folks. 623-444-5889. Or if you're outside of the United States and outside of Canada, you live somewhere else in the world, you can send me a flash message. I'll read it and respond to it. And you just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says flash message. Now, earlier I was talking about these plasma rocket thrusters, and this is not, you know, something way, way out in the future. It is being developed now at MIT. Also, there is some testing going on to develop lunar habitat power systems. Now, the tests are being done at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. They have, at that place, a facility that's really it's a one-of-a-kind. What they can do is it enables the engineers to simulate the nuclear power process of heat transfer from a reactor to a power converter without having to use any nuclear fuel, without having any sort of nuclear materials. But they can test the process. And that's important because what they're trying to do is construct some nuclear power units that can be used on the moon to power a small human colony on the moon. Now, out in space or on the moon, the whole process has to be done a little bit differently because you don't have those huge cooling towers for the nuclear fuel rods. Okay, you don't have the huge cooling towers. And what happens is you need to cool the water down and run it back through to cool the rods down. You have any idea the size of one of these nuclear power plants that they're going to send to the moon? I'll tell you when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone number, we have time for one or two calls. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And let me remind you, if you have not done so and you want to get in on this seminar, you need to register. Now, make sure that you have subscribe to the K-Files e-zine because there is a special price in there for you. It'll save you some money. And it's going to be, I'm going to start emailing it right after this show. So, if you haven't subscribed, it's free to subscribe. Go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click where it says K-Files e-zine and subscribe. Then you'll get that special. All right? And there's no reason for you not to subscribe. There's no reason for you to be in the dark. All the goodies always get put in the K-Files e-zine. So that's what you need. You need that information in order to make sure that you get in on any of the specials that come along. Also, if you're not a member, if you haven't joined our members area and you want to be in that drawing, you need to do that. You need to join, and you need to do it before Sunday night at midnight because that's the cutoff point. You can still join after that, but that's the cutoff point for the drawing for that tapestry, all right? What happens Monday, Sunday night at midnight is we run a list of all the members that are in our members area. And then we take that list and cut all the names apart and drop them in the box for the drawing. All right, Sunday night at midnight. All right, what about this reactor? I mentioned it. This nuclear reactor that they're planning. They're developing it now. They're running some tests on the process, and they're going to send it to the moon to power a colony on the moon. Well, how big do you think it would have to be? The size of a city bus, maybe? That would be a very small nuclear reactor. Very small. The size of a bus. Well, no. As a matter of fact, it's not the size of a bus. As a matter of fact, what they're working on, and this will surprise you, what they are working on is a lot smaller than a bus. Now, a lot of you, a lot of people that I'm speaking to right now, you've got a backyard barbecue that has a propane tank, right? Now, some of those propane tanks are sort of short and squatty, and some of them are a little bit taller. All right, picture the taller one. That's the size of this nuclear reactor. That's the size of this ingenious machine that is going to power a colony on the moon. Just blows your mind, doesn't it? No big cooling towers. It's different once you get out into microgravity. It's different once you're into the moon's gravity than what you have here on Earth. And the process can be different. And so they are able to build this thing in a way that can be very compact, and it will produce enough power to power a colony on the moon. So you take that up there and you take another one for a spare, and you're in business for a very, very long time. Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. But, you know, Walter Bosley has been on the show talking about that very fact, that we have some extremely smart people that are doing some very futuristic things, and these people, these folks, are the ones that are designing some of the stuff that we're talking about. We're, you know, some of these excessively smart people doing very futuristic things are designing plasma rocket thrusters. And some of these very smart people doing very futuristic science are designing this reactor that is about the size of a barbecue propane tank. And they're pretty well along with this because they're beginning to test the process now without having to use any nuclear fuel. They can create the process of the heat exchange that you would get from this nuclear reaction and transfer it to a power generator. And so at the Marshall Space Flight Center, that's NASA, but it's in Huntsville, Alabama, they have a facility where they can test this. And so it's into the testing phase now. We're not far away. I mean, this is, we're standing with our toes right over the edge of the cliff. And beyond that is all that futuristic stuff that we all said it'll never happen in my lifetime. It is happening. It's happening. It's an exciting time to be alive. It is happening. And it's just possible that it's some of that very futuristic kind of science that was seen in the sky above Needles, California. Yeah, it's possible that it's extraterrestrial. Anything's possible. I mean, in the absence of evidence, all speculation is on the table. But, you know, when you put it all together, I mean, I could sit here and make a case for that being extraterrestrial. But honestly, when you put it all together, it looks to me more as if that's terrestrial, and if it is, that means we built it, we humans, and that means that we have built something that is really, really futuristic, and that's pretty exciting as well. Now, in this edition of the K-Files E-Zine, I have some photographs of an aircraft that is really futuristic, except it's already in a museum. Many of you did not even know it existed. You've never seen or heard of this spacecraft. Well, it's not a spacecraft, but it looks like one. This aircraft. You've never seen it, you've never heard of it, but it's very futuristic, and if you were viewing it from the bottom as it flies over, I think you would say That's got to be extraterrestrial. We don't have anything like that. But this is already in a museum. It did 40 flights. It was never designed to go into production. It was designed to prove technology. And it was never designed, never planned to go into production. 40 flights from 1996 to 1999, and it's already in a museum. The point? Well, the point is, we've got some really futuristic stuff out there that you and I do not know about until years later. And it's pretty exciting to think that some of us, some of our species, are designing this really futuristic science. They're designing a future that looks like what you see when you watch Star Wars or Star Trek. I want to thank you for being with me this evening. Don't forget, get the K-Files e-zine, subscribe to that. We're going to send it out. Then you can register for the seminar, and you can do it at a real discount. And don't forget to join our members area if you want to be in that drawing. All right, folks, that's it. That's a wrap for the week. I might cool off by Monday. We'll see. Probably will. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.